dismiss those who are privileged to go to Discovery Club. For the rest of you, if you'll work the sheet in the bulletin with the questions, I think you'll have it. Get those done, turn them in at the back, and you can go to lunch. They're well done. Well done. The ninth verse of the 16th chapter of Proverbs makes this statement. The mind of a man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Do you get that? The mind of man plans the direction, but the Lord directs his steps. I take that to mean that we make plans. They're legitimate. We chart courses. But where we ultimately go, God directs. Think about that proverb for a moment. Have you experienced the truth of it? You planned, you set your course, and somewhere in the middle of that, maybe the purpose changed or your direction changed by the hand of God. He turned the steps you took in a way you never even imagined. We're going to see that this morning as we look at Joshua and the spies he sent out in the second chapter of this book we're studying. Joshua dispatched two spies to Jericho. Israel was about to enter the land to conquer it. So they go into Jericho on basically, you could say, some military reconnaissance. But in the course of being there, God changed their purpose primarily from reconnaissance to an encounter with a Canaanite prostitute who had placed her faith in the one true God. The plan had all the earmarks of a basic military mission to come back with some facts about who was there in the city they would first face. It made sense to do that. Gather that kind of information about the opponent with whom the first battle was likely to be fought. God was going to deliver Jericho to Israel, and as the leader of the nation, Joshua was doing some due diligence. But what Israel really needed was not military reconnaissance at that point. What Israel needed was to see that God would extend grace to a Canaanite woman who had heard of his great working on behalf of this people, and she responded to him in faith. This means that the very first encounter the nation poised on the east side of the Jordan is going to have with a Canaanite in the land they've been promised and given by God was with a woman who came to believe in the God of Israel, that he is the one true God of heaven and earth. Let's look at the details as this is unfolded for us in Joshua chapter 2. It starts with verse 1. This is the mission of the spies. They're sent out, and they're the brief reference to their arrival in Jericho. It says, then Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. So they went and came into the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab and lodged there. We know the end of the Jericho story. We know the unusual way God conquered Jericho. But you know, at this point, God has not revealed his plan for that to Joshua or to Israel. So Joshua decided to send two spies to reconnoiter the land, but especially Jericho. Some of the writers I've read criticized Joshua for sending spies. They said it evidences a lack of faith on the part of Joshua. I think that's incorrect. I think the mission of the spies was exactly what God wanted to see happen. God used the spies, but he accomplished so much more than Joshua had envisioned as he made his plan. Joshua planned his way. The Lord directed the steps. Let me suggest a small point of application. God is not here prescribing each action Joshua is to take as the leader of Israel. God has appointed him in the role that he has. He is expected to use the ability God has given him to lead. As you'll see, God will conquer Jericho. But here, he allows Joshua to send the spies out to check out Jericho. And then he took Joshua's efforts and used them to further his will. And he does the same with us. He'll take our efforts and use those where we are to accomplish his will, sometimes in ways we could not have imagined that would happen in those circumstances. But back to the spies. You remember that Israel had sent spies into the land earlier, over at Kadesh Barnea, under the leadership of Moses. The spies went into the land, and they came back, and Numbers 13 tells us about that. It was disastrous. Joshua was part of that 40 years earlier. He and Caleb were the only two who were willing to trust God to give them the land. Joshua does it a bit differently this time, doesn't he? Two spies. Only two. And he sent them out secretly. It sounds covert. It does have the sound, doesn't it? Of sort of a, you send out the CIA or the Defense Intelligence in a covert way. Go infiltrate, see what's over there in Jericho and in the land. But he knew with just two, if they came back and reported to him out of fear, as some of their predecessors had done, perhaps he could keep that from spreading through the nation. But anyhow, verse 1 tells us that they were sent out from a place called Shittim. I've put a slide up to give you a feel for where that is. It's a slide that actually shows their conquest on the Transjordan. And Shittim is there just to the east and a tad north of the Dead Sea, and there's Jericho. So here's where they are. They're close. This is a few miles across here, not too long at all, across the Jordan. If you enjoy a little irony, let me mention this to you. Numbers 25:1, we're told by Moses that when Israel first arrived at this location, right where they are now, when they first got there, the people began to play the harlot with the daughters of Moab. Horrible time. They worshiped the gods of the Moabites and joined in their sacrificial worship. to their false gods. It infuriated God. Israel was playing the harlot spiritually. Now we're reading about, in Joshua chapter 2, a woman, a harlot, who turns away from her own culture and her way of life to the God of Israel to worship Him. In the first instance, when Israel played that at this location earlier, God struck down 23,000 people in one day and another 1,000 later, a total of 24,000 people, bam, because of their extreme disobedience to Him. In this instance, God's going to preserve the life and save from destruction this Canaanite woman and her family who put their faith in the God of Israel. We know that Jericho at that time was not a large city, but it was extremely well fortified. It had a very strategic position on the eastern frontier of Canaan. Jericho is about 800 feet below sea level. If you're coming in and heading to Jerusalem, you're going to go up about 3,300 feet, as Jerusalem is almost 2,500 feet above sea level. Let me give you another slide that gives us some topography of the land. We got another slide back there. There we go. What we've got here is Jericho. There's the Dead Sea. They'll be coming across there. If travelers are coming from Syria up in here or from the Sea of Galilee, they'll come down along the Jordan. They'll come across into Jericho. Then there are about three main routes at that time up into the hill country of Israel. Jerusalem is right here. This is called the Ascent of Adumim. I only point that out because it was the most common of the routes up into the mountains, going up from 800 feet below sea level to 2,500 feet above sea level. So if you're headed into Jerusalem, you come through Jericho, and then you go up through one of the routes. The Ascent of Adumim is the most widely used at that time and thereafter. So Jericho is strategically placed on that eastern boundary of Canaan. Now, in this secret mission, the spies have got to cross from where they are into Canaan. They've got to cross the Jordan River. It's at flood stage. We're going to see in our next study when the nation crosses. So they probably have to walk to a place where they can literally swim across. I'm taking these are Israelite seals that, you know, they're well chosen by Joshua. They're able to cross the Jordan and get into the land. And verse 1 tells us they went to the house of Rahab the harlot. That's where they elected to stay. Later, Josephus, the historian, the Jewish historian writing about this, calls her Rahab the innkeeper. The word literally here is harlot. Men would have stayed there, very likely, but that's the business she ran. But when you think about it, if you're sending the spies in, this would be a very logical place to stay. Coming into the city, don't want to attract attention, covert mission, go to her place where travelers come through on a regular basis. Not a bad choice of a place to stay. Likely, travelers who stayed there were the ones who brought the word about what God had done for this nation of Israel that we're going to see more about in just a moment. And there is absolutely nothing in the text to suggest any sexual impropriety on the part of these two spies. Nothing at all. That should not be even thought of here. They're just, I think, trying not to raise suspicion. But we're going to see that did not work well. Look with me at verse 2. It was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." I mean, the night they arrived, word is to the king, "We've got a couple of guys from Israel that are here checking us out, looking at the land." So much for the secrecy of any mission. It shows, I think, that the king of Jericho was on high alert. They knew what was coming. Israel was coming their way. They were very much on guard. They were aware of where Israel was camped, and they immediately picked up on Israelites coming into their city. Look at his command to Rahab in verse 3. He knows where they are. He immediately sends word to her. "And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, 'Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out the land.'" He wants these spies. He wants Rahab to give them up, turn them over. There seems, interestingly, to be enough respect for her that they don't search her house. You're going to see this unfold as we go through it. Look at Rahab's response in verse 4. "But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them." Rahab must have realized that their cover was blowing quickly. So before word gets to her from the king, she's already taken these two Israelites and hidden them. She's got them protected as best she can. We'll see how in a moment. "And she said to the king's representatives, 'Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. It came about when it was time to shut the gate at dark that the men went out. I don't know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them.' She said, 'I didn't know who these guys were. But all I know is they were about to shut the gate. It was getting dark, and these guys took off. You can catch them. Get going.'" She's sending them on their way. Look at what she said to them, though. She denied knowing where they'd come from. Is that true? No, she knew. "Then she said, 'They left.' Is that true? No, they were on the roof." She was getting rid of the king's men. Rahab lied to these servants of the king who had come. If you start study of Joshua 2, you'll read there is a lot written about the lie of Rahab. A lot of questions about it, and there's legitimate questions about it. Was it okay for Rahab to lie? Some would say that, you know, she was a Canaanite. They lied habitually. So that was her cultural understanding. No big deal to lie in the Canaanite culture. It was universally done, so she did it. She was just acting out her culture. Well, that's a bit of dangerous reasoning if you're going to support the lie of Rahab. We embrace our culture all too much, and it leads to a lot of things that are not God-honoring at all. Then you have the argument that's maybe more appealing that says, well, you know, if Rahab hadn't lied, the spies would have been killed. She lied for a good reason. The end justified the means she utilized. That's a very slippery slope. to justify a lie because there was my objective at the end was good. That raises some questions. Could God, the God of heaven and earth we're about to hear about, could God have protected the lives of the spies without a lie on the part of Rahab? I would tend to think so. But it raises a question for us. Are there times when it's okay to lie? I think to examine that, you've got to look first at the character of the one we serve. Titus 1:2, Paul writes this. He writes of the hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised long ago. It is impossible for God to lie. It is counter to his character. He cannot and will not do it. Revelation 14:5, speaking about the 144,000, this is written, and no lie was found in their mouth. They were blameless. What determined that they were without sin, what they spoke was always true, never false. This could go on, but don't miss John 8:44, which identifies Satan as the father of lies. Lies may be expedient, but they never represent God or his character. God is truth. He is total and complete truth. A lie is always contrary to the character of God. Well, how does this fit with Rahab? Rahab responded by faith to the knowledge she had about God. God was merciful to this Canaanite woman in Jericho who, like the rest of us, was a sinner. In many, many ways. Many ways, just like we are. The telling of a lie was only one thing in her life, but she made a declaration of faith and acted on it, as we see in chapter 2. And God received her as she was. She was not earning her way to God here. She was responding to him in faith, and he received her as his own. And she was not perfect. She knew very little about the God she trusted. She had just met him. We know perhaps a bit more. But let's go on and see how this unfolds. There's a hiding place that she had for them. Look at it in verses 6 and 7. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax which she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued them on the road to the Jordan, to the fords, and as soon as those who were pursuing them had gone out, they shut the gate. As I said, Rahab had hidden these men quickly, and she put them on the roof of her home in these called stalks of flax. I won't ask you how many know what flax is. Some of you do. Bev Frensley could talk to you about flax. Flax is used, for example, to make linen. It's used in fabrics. Stalks of flax, when they're harvested, they soak them in water for 3 to 4 weeks. Soak this in water, then it has to dry. So what had happened? Rahab had harvested some flax. She put the stalks on her roof. They were drying. They were evidently large enough to provide some cover for the two spies. So she hid them up there, did the best she could with that. She hid them in the stalks of flax as they dried on the roof. They never checked her house. They went out, they pursued the men, they went out the gate. logic would say those guys must be going back toward the Jordan River to get back to the nation, so they went out hunting for them in that direction. And now we get to the centerpiece of this whole chapter. It begins here in verse 8. This is the conversation between Rahab and the spies, and we learn why Rahab did what she did. Rahab put her life on the line here for these two men that entered her home. Let's see why she did that. Verse 8 tells us, "Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof." She wants to go talk with them. And she does before they go to sleep. And said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land." Stop there for just a second. Here is the Canaanite woman. This is her home. Canaan is her land here. She says, "I know Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God, has given you the land." Wow. She had that understanding at that point in time. Listen, we'll hear more of how that got to her. "And the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt." You remember that? They're leaving Egypt. God parts the waters so they can cross on dry land. And as Pharaoh comes through, they converge back and his army is destroyed. That word got to Jericho. It got there. And who dried up the water of the Red Sea? Rahab says, "We've heard how Yahweh dried up the Red Sea for you." We got that message. When you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. Remember, we looked at that in the first lesson in Joshua when they went up the east side in the Transjordan and conquered the kings over there. That word had come to Rahab and to Jericho. She wanted to tell these men why she protected their lives. This was a woman, a harlot by trade, explaining to them what she knew about the dealings of Yahweh with her people. It wasn't just that the people of Jericho had heard about Israel's victories. They also heard that the God of Israel had provided. It's not just that there's another power in the area at that time. It's that their God is delivering them. And that word comes to Jericho. God supernaturally was delivering his people, and word of that had spread. Now look at verse 11 with me. "When we," that's plural, "when we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you." When God acts supernaturally, man is defenseless. The people in Canaan got that. They were no match. However powerful, however fortified they were, they're no match for the supernatural power that God displayed. She says, "When we heard of it, our hearts melted and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord Yahweh, your Elohim, he is Elohim in heaven above and on earth beneath." This is the confession of the Canaanite woman, the harlot in the city of Jericho who gets the word about what God is doing and declares, I know that your God is God in heaven and on earth. Wow. What a confession. It is not hard at all to understand Israel taking the land at the direction of God when you see God as the sovereign one over the heaven and the earth together. This is why Rahab, encountering two men from Israel, immediately undertakes to protect them and to put her life on the line. Her life was on the line. If the king found those spies there, his intent would have been to take her out. What a statement of faith. The Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on the earth beneath. How did Rahab know enough to make that declaration of faith? We don't know the details. There are some scholars who write, those aren't her words. They're not her words. Couldn't have done it. She couldn't have made those kinds of proclamations. She's a Canaanite. She didn't know the spiritual jargon in order to be able to express what she said in verse 11. That had to have been added later. Somebody added that to the Joshua account later. Couldn't have been a literal quote from Rahab. There are three places in the Pentateuch where this similar words are used. This is part of what they refer to. Exodus 24, you shall not make yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. In Deuteronomy 4:39, acknowledge and take to heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Writers are saying, this is Jewish language. How does the Canaanite woman talk in the same terms? And finally, Deuteronomy 5:8, you shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in the heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. Well, is it too much to believe that the God of heaven and earth could have allowed Rahab to receive that kind of knowledge so she could have made that proclamation of faith that Scripture records that she made? Well, she made it. But what about the rest of Jericho? This is one woman in Jericho. It's a city with a lot of people. This is a great lesson for Israel. Rahab is evidence of what God wanted to accomplish through His people, Israel, on the earth. He wanted others to learn of Him through them and their example, so they would turn to Him. It's part of the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant. God's blessing was available in Canaan to the Canaanites, to those who were not descendants of Abraham, such as Rahab. But the blessing came through the nation of Israel and what God was doing in and through them. And it came to Rahab, this Canaanite woman who got it and who proclaimed her faith in God. Rahab not only does that, Rahab is an astute woman. It comes out throughout chapter 2. Here's part of it. She's immediately dealing with them now about her family and their protection. Listen to what she says in the next three verses, beginning at 12. Now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you will also deal kindly with my father's household. And he stopped there. She says, I've dealt kindly. I've dealt, the word there is hesed, that loyal love. I've been I've been right on with you, and I want you to be that way with me. And give me a pledge of the truth, and spare my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters with all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." So she's making a plea for her family, and the men said to her in verse 14, "Our life for yours, if you don't tell this business of ours. And it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." Again, some criticize Rahab for being too aggressive, trying to manipulate the spies. And I don't see that at all. I see that as a woman here who has concern for her family. Others say, but Israel was to enter into no covenant, no agreement with the people of the land. I would say here, Rahab is a distinction with a difference. This is a woman who has put her faith in the same God who is the God of Israel. In that sense, she is one with them in worshiping him. And she asks for protection for her family, and that's appropriate. Chapter 11 of Hebrews, the great faith hall of fame, includes Rahab. By faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. Note what it is said about those who died when the Lord conquered Jericho. Excuse me, the disobedient died. They heard the same message as Rahab, but they failed to believe in the God about whom they received word. Faith is always the basis for a relationship with God. It was true with Rahab, and it is true now. Hebrews 11:6 says, "Without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him." We come to him in faith. As we conclude the time the spies had with Rahab, look how she facilitated their escape. She says, "You guys got to get going, and get going now." She let them down in verse 15 by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall, so that she was living on the wall. We'll talk about the walls of Jericho in a future study. But she said to them, "Go to the hill country so that the pursuers will not happen upon you, and hide yourselves there for 3 days until the pursuers return. Then afterward you may go on your way." "Look, I've got a way out for you. My house is right here on the wall. We'll just let you down and get to the hill country. Now let me tell you, you've looked east of Jericho. Jordan River, below sea level, that's flat. You look west of Jericho, remember the topographical slide? It's mountainous. There are caves that are beyond number to the west, immediately to the west of Jericho as they go. So it was easy for them to walk over into the mountains there and hide for a little bit longer before heading back to Joshua. The spies insisted that Rahab's home be marked. Listen to what they said beginning in verse 17. The men said to her, "We shall be free from this oath to you which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you tie this cord of scarlet thread in the window through which you let us down, and gather to yourself into the house your father and your mother and your brothers and all your father's household. It shall come about that anyone who goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be free. But anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him." The spies, good little move here on their part. They say, "Look, when the time comes, you need the scarlet material hanging in your window." They come out that window. They knew exactly where to look. They probably just reached over and said, take what you've got right there, hang that in the window, and then bring everybody inside the house. If you're in the house when we come, destruction will pass you by. Sounds a little familiar, doesn't it? If you're in the house, you'll be preserved. You and all your family, you'll be protected. If anything happens to you in the house, it's on our head. It's our lives. But if you go out, it's on you. And then they said in verse 20, but if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be free from the oath which you have made us swear. She said, according to your words, so be it. Rahab, she strikes the bargain. She doesn't mess around. Yes, we'll do that. She says, so she sent them away and they departed and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. That night, that time, she's got it right there and it stayed there. They departed and came to the hill country and remained there for 3 days until the pursuers returned. Now the pursuers had sought them all along the road, but had not found them. Then the two men in the last two verses of chapter 2 returned and came down from the hill country and crossed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun, and they related to him all that had happened to them. They gave Joshua, the commander, all the details of what had happened in the city. I think Joshua wrote the book we're studying, save the part about his death. Joshua would have known from the spies what Rahab said. And they said to Joshua, surely the Lord has given all the land into our hands. Moreover, the inhabitants of the land have melted away before us. This confirms what God had said back in Deuteronomy 2:25, before they got this close to the land. And he said, that this day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the peoples everywhere under the heavens, who when they hear the report of you will tremble and be in anguish because of you. Israel was about to cross the brook Zered and move up through the Transjordan when those words were spoken. This would have confirmed that for Joshua. There was dread and fear in the land because of the nation of Israel. Well, why all the detail in chapter 2 about one woman? Well, first of all, I think it's important to see the mercy of God. The mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Joshua had no idea there was one woman in Jericho who belonged to God and who needed protection. We don't always understand why God would take us a certain way. We may think it's just a reconnaissance mission that we're on. And then God directs our steps and uses that intent to accomplish his will in ways we never imagined. How significant was it to protect Rahab? That one woman in Jericho, a Canaanite, is in the lineage of Messiah. Rahab married a man by the name of Salmon. Their union produced Boaz. Boaz was the son of Rahab. Boaz married Ruth. Ruth was a Moabitess, remember? Do you suppose Boaz was so well prepared for Ruth because his own mother had been a Canaanite? Rahab had been. He marries Ruth, the Moabite woman. And they become the parents of Obed. And Obed's the father of Jesse. And Jesse's the father of King David. Rahab is in the line of Christ. There was a significant woman in Jericho. God stopped everything. And they sent two spies in because they needed to know about this woman. Not a perfect woman, but I'll tell you, when word came that God was moving, she heard it and she believed it. And she belonged to him and he preserved her. If you want to see the genealogy with Rahab's name, look at Matthew 1, verses 5 and 6. It's right there. People are significant to God. Sometimes we have no idea how the life we touch may have significance beyond what we see. For us, it's reconnaissance. We're just doing the job we thought we were called to do. God sometimes has so much more for us there that he uses. Let's pray. Help our hearts, O God, as we think about Rahab today, to be freshened with how you intend to use us. And just submit ourselves that we may be used of you right where we are. Faithful to do what seems like needs to be done. Trusting you to direct our steps. Thank you for the account of Rahab. Thank you how it encourages us with your great mercy for this woman, a harlot, a Canaanite. Oh, but in the line of Christ. What an honor. What an honor. Lifted up in Hebrews 11 because of her great faith as she stood alone. Thank you for her example to us and the truth of your word that shows us how you work in and through the lives of those who are committed to you and accomplish what is your will. Thank you for the privilege, O God, of serving. Grant that we may be faithful, I pray. Amen.